working?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you. I see many familiar faces. Just another one. It's wonderful to be here. I've come in the past to one or two of the sessions, but haven't been able to make many of them because this is a very special day at La Casa. At 10 o'clock on Thursday is when all of our staff gets together. And so not a time that I can miss. So they're sending me blessings today, too. So my intention, I know you're going kind of chapter by chapter through the book and the two Anns. I listened with great interest to their two talks. They were just wonderful. We're really following kind of the chapters in Philip's book. But I'm going to kind of maybe weave a little bit more of my personal journey with Celtic spirituality, sharing that with you today. But I think it does also fit even in the chapter that we have. My intention is to weave together kind of for you the elements of my Celtic spirituality in a rather organic way, in hopes that elements of my journey might speak to ones of yours. I'll be weaving together some of the threads of the creation spirituality that I encountered with Matthew Fox, as Martha mentioned. Not in the early 1900s, but in the early 1990s. So I am old, but... and then, you know, some of the threads of John O'Donohue's wonderful books, which I brought a few of them here, and I'm sure many of us in this room today were blessed to hear him on some of his visits to Santa Barbara. He's near and dear to our heart, and of course we lost him way too soon. And just a few months ago I was blessed to manage to find his little grave on the shore of Galway Bay on my way to the Aran Islands, and wandered around this ruin of a church and the ruin of a grave site, looking for a new bright marble stone, you know, as would be appropriate for this great man. And looked and looked and found nothing and was about to give up and walk back to my little car. And then I noticed this little slab of wood off to the side. I thought, oh, and I walked around. Tiny little sign. John O'Donohue, poet, friend. And of course, little tokens scattered all over of people who had made that journey. So, threads from John O'Donohue. Threads from the Sacred Art of Living and Dying, the Anam Kar program that I am in the middle of now. And threads from a wonderful teacher that we have in the midst of that program, a woman named Fionn Tulach, and the particular lineage that she carries through today of the ancient Kalidae tradition. So I'm going to try and weave all of those things in today. I think the beginning point for me in Celtic spirituality is that Celtic spirituality is such a life-affirming spirituality. Even back from the days with Matthew Fox, it was all about original blessing. And that God created all, not out of nothing. You're going to come to that in another chapter, and I think Anne brought it up. God created all, not out of nothing, but out of God's self. And so all is good. spirit is good. And in many ways, this Celtic vision of God's creation is closer to the Jewish tradition than our kind of more contemporary post-Constantine Christian tradition has led us to in recent generations, as it was influenced by the Greco-Roman world and the split of dualism. And for me, this simple shift makes all the difference in the world. It makes a difference in how I view the innate goodness and worth of my body. It makes a difference in how I view Mother Earth and all of creation, all in the image of God. Not just the human person, not just the male, but all of creation, the image of God. And John O'Donohue, who I'm assuming you've read, has so much beauty as he talks about our clay body. You know, dust thou art, and until dust thou will return. Yes, beautiful, beautiful dust, you know. It's stardust. The dust on this earth is from the stardust in the heavens, all of creation. So yes, we are dust, we are stardust. And this clay body of ours is so beautiful and is so good. And, you know, we often in our world today talk about being on a spiritual journey. But in the Celtic tradition, it's the other way around. Our spirit is on a human journey when we're in this world. And so what are the lessons, what are the gifts that are coming to our spirit as our spirit is embodied? And so also in the Western tradition, we talk about our spirit or our soul being in our body. We look around for what's that little space, that tiny little place where this perhaps shriveled up little spirit is residing in our body. But in the Celtic tradition, it's the opposite. Our body is in our spirit, in our soul. And so the more we grow soul, it doesn't grow just bigger inside of our heart, but it goes bigger around us. And the more we grow it, the more it moves out to touch other souls until it grows and touches the soul of the world. And we live in intimate and deep connection with all that is. So all of this makes our body so good, and all of the senses of our body so good. And John O'Donohue particularly talks about the need to attune to our senses, because they are going to awaken within and around us the divine. They are going to be points of connection to the divine. And I think one of the ends talked about the difference between pantheism and panentheism. So I don't suppose I, you know, need to do that much, and I don't suppose you're very worried about whether it's pantheism or panentheism. But that used to be a big concern, you know, when we were young. But so our senses are the way that we can connect with all of God's beautiful, beautiful creation. So I want to share with you a little bit about what is called the three streams of Celtic spirituality. So when I was at Matthew Fox's at Creation Spirituality, we had a teacher there whose name was Starhawk, And she was a witch. She was a professed witch. It was one of the things that Ratzinger had posted on the wall of one of the terrible offenses that Matthew Fox had made, was that he, at his school, employed a witch. Another one of his offenses was that he taught feminist spirituality. So when I was there at that school, I remember going across town on the Candlemas. Okay? So Candlemas is one of those quarter holidays in the Celtic year, halfway between the winter solstice and the spring equinox. And, you know, it happened throughout Christian tradition that Christianity came in and layered on top of an old pagan holiday, holy day, made it a holy day. And so this was one of the ones that we were going to, and we were going to watch it being, or we were going to participate in this very pagan ritual. And I'm accompanied by two Irish priests from Ireland that were there for the chorus. And I find out that on Candlemas, part of what is being celebrated is Bridget and is the new fire. And you've already heard how Bridget is this combination of the goddess Bridget and the saint Bridget. And, oh my gosh, I didn't bring that book. I thought I did. But by Sean O'Swynn, he's written a book, Bridget, Goddess and Saint. So here is a Benedictine monk, fully in the Catholic tradition, talking about that. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. This is very pagan. You know, that's okay. It's good. It's interesting. But come to find out that one of the Irish priests that is with me, his sister lives in Kildare, the town that Bridget came from. She is a Brigidine sister, a Catholic sister. And they, a few years ago, have reignited the temple fire, the fire temple next to Bridget's monastery, where she and the women in her monastery used to mind this eternal flame. And they have recreated it, and they have taken it to their house. So all of a sudden, I think, Catholic sisters, Bridget, taking this flame, this holiday. So I try to start opening my mind up to these possibilities. But it wasn't until just a year or so ago when I encountered Fionn Tulach through the Anamkara program that I saw that there were these little corners in the world, in the Celtic world, where the separation between the pagan and the Druid and Christianity did not exist. And so this is referred to as the three streams of Celtic spirituality. And so it's not just Fionn Tulach, who was, like Starhawk, a pagan priestess in her early days, a bard, a singer. But she encountered this very, very ancient tradition somewhere along the way, and for the past 30 years has been a monk in this ancient, ancient Kaldi tradition. But here's also this Benedictine priest speaking of the three streams of Celtic spirituality. The first stream is the Druidic Celtic pagan tradition. All the stories, the understanding of the world. Added to that are the Hebrew scriptures, very, very especially the Psalms, the 150 psalms that match the 150 islands off of the coast of Ireland. And then completing that, the New Testament, the Christ. And so there is this thread running through this ancient and today Celtic spirituality that keeps intact that that continuity and practices from each of those traditions. So the Cayley Day tradition itself, if you go and look at some very ancient manuscripts, you'll see references to the Kaldi in 6th century manuscripts, so manuscripts that are written in the 500s. And the Irish monastic tradition is a bit different than the Western European monastic tradition, where community was really focused on everybody living in common, doing a lot together as community. The Irish Celtic monasticism came more from the Desert Fathers and Mothers. It was more an Eastern, Northern African, Egyptian, Middle Eastern style of spirituality and style of monasticism. And these early monks tended to live more of an eremitical hermit life, and sometimes very austere and sometimes very remote. And they would talk about the white martyrdom of going out away from anywhere, and probably the most austere and most remote of these is this island of Skellig Michael off of the west coast of Ireland, which I tried desperately to reach, but the weather was so bad I couldn't get a boat to take me out there. So that's how remote. That was their desert, to reference the desert fathers. And so Fionn Tuilag is a member of that very ancient tradition. So when Whitby came and the Celtic world got brought into the Roman world, in a sense this went a bit underground or out at the perimeters, just like the Celts themselves went to the perimeter of kind of the known world. But today in Ireland and in Scotland, there still remain very, very small numbers of these monks who are in that tradition, and Fionn Tuilag is a part of that. And we're going to wait until after the break, but you'll experience some of her teaching. We've got a little video to share with you about that. It was out of this Cayley Day tradition that the whole notion of Anamkara came. So anyone who's read John O'Donohue, you've experienced Anamkara through his beautiful, beautiful works. And you understand that an Anamkara is a very, very special friend, a soul friend, and that an Anamkara is beyond time. And so you may have an Anamkara who is specially yours but is no longer in this world. I do. I knew of her as an Anamkara when she was alive, and she's journeyed with me after her death, and it was only recently that I really began to understand that she is my Anamkara. And it doesn't matter that she lives in another world than I am in. She can still accompany me through this world and accompany my body. So as you think about that tradition of the Anamkara, you might begin to just delve in to notice if there is someone living or in the other world who is your Anamkara. Columba, one of the great Celtic saints, used to say that Christ is my druid. So Christ is my pagan, holy priest, saint. Christ is my Anamkara. And so how does that even shift our relationship to Christ, to think of Christ as our soul friend, our Anamkara? And then at another level, you are living inside of your Anamkara, your spirit in this body, clay, temple is your Anamkara. And so how can you be with that beautiful temple, that beautiful accompaniment in your world? And so to think of self as Anamkara. So the possibility of the numerous Anamkara. So one of the amazing teachings of these three streams coming together and focusing on maybe one of the new streams, the more druidic stream with you, is this notion of three worlds. And that all three worlds are good. And that our goal in our life journey is to simultaneously live in those three worlds. So the Celt love circles, as you may know. And so this outer circle is the world that we know. This is the Krunya world. This is the world of clay. This is the world of our clay body. This is the world of that great outpouring of God into all of creation. And we're very much aware that we live in that world. The second world that the Kalide speak of is the altar world. And that's the other world. That's the world of your Anamkara. If your Anamkara is dead, that's your world of the ancestors. That's your world of all who are to come. That's the world of the angels. And what the English pejoratively named the Celtic angels and spirits, the fairy world. Okay, and in a sense, fairies was an English put down of the spirit world of the Celts. And the fairy world is not these cute little beings that we have decorating pictures, but grand beings of the other world, who are present and who are with us. And then finally, the inner world is the world of Nayar. And that's the world of pure spirit, the world that we cannot name, the world of God. And so when the Kalide pray, and when the Kalide are out in the world, the goal is to live in all three of these worlds simultaneously. So as you pray, as you are being present to all of these. So let's just stop for a minute and, questions.
Can you write that Kalide so we recognize it?
Right, okay. So it's problematic because all of these are Celtic words, and so they're all transliterated. from the Celtic language, and Fionn will do prayers that are in ancient Gaelic, so that even my Irish friends who I studied Anamkara with can't understand it because it's such an ancient Gaelic. And of course now there's the Scots Gaelic and the Irish Gaelic, so they'd all have different spellings, but this is how Fionn spells it. Okay. So just kind of, what's this bringing up? What's this stirring for you?
Yeah, I wonder if you would define a little bit more what white martyrdom is and the distinction.
Okay.
You were making between.
All right. So you know, in the early days of the church, and you know, martyrdom was the way that you became most holy, and the way that you became a saint. But and so for the early missionaries that went around Europe, and before Constantine and the empire became part of the church, they were being killed, and so that was your straight path, if you will, to heaven. But in the Celtic world, when Christianity came in, it was accepted, and so there was not the violence of the missionary and the work as there was in other places. And so the Celts were looking, if you will, or some of the Celts were looking for a way to the straight road to heaven. And so this sort of self-exile became a parallel goal for experience. Yeah. Yeah.
Struggling a little bit, this notion of being of the earth, of nature. At the same time, you're talking about our essential goodness, and how Celtic Christianity is affirmative. But nature is so imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
How do we reconcile that? Does it mean that we need to embrace imperfection, then, if we are part of this imperfect nature?
Mm-hmm.
Things go wrong all the time.
Right.
Nature can be brutal.
Yes.
You know?
Right. Well, and after our break, when we hear this incredible story that Fionn will narrate, I think you will see one of the places where that comes in. Right, and this is not to deny that there is evil in the world, that there is bad, and that we don't have to struggle for justice, but that it is coming out, and it's not to say that we are not harmed, we are not wounded, but that deep at our core, we are good. We are all immaculate conceptions, you know, if you will. But then, yes, the shadow comes in. And evil is there in the world.
One other question I have in my mind. The writer here, he talks about Christ.
He mentioned
Christ. Not Jesus necessarily, but is there a different understanding of Christ? I mean, how do we understand Christ? Are we talking about some power, some connection that's related to but separate from the physical, historical Jesus? What does Christ mean?
Right. So I think Newell, and I'm not sure whether it's in this book or one of his others, but I think it is here. He talks about the Gospel of John, and that Jesus, the Christ, not Jesus Christ is his last name, you're all beyond that, but that Jesus, the Christ, always was, always will be. And so when we talk about the Christ, that's not to denigrate or to lessen the human journey that the Christ went on, just as our spirit, our soul, is on this human journey. But it is to say that presence of God in creation is still with us,
mm-hmm.
and is still connected to us.
Mm-hmm. So it is somewhat like a power or a force or a happening or a process or something like that.
Right. And, you know, and that all depends on, you know, whether we think of God as being static being, or whether we think of God as process being,
mm-hmm.
always,
mm-hmm.
and evolving, and creating, and Christ as well.
I find this kind of language, if I grasp it,
mm-hmm.
as something I'm more likely wanting to embrace, as opposed to the more traditional static,
mm-hmm.
theistic mm-hmm. view of God, because I sense movement, energy, happening, being, as you put it, process, and so on, which is makes lifts me up off my seat.
Great.
When I get into it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not usually into it, but when I'm into it, it's a very uplifting place to be.
And sometimes trying to pin it down too much and give it too many names can bring it right back, you know, down. You know, and it's just, I mean, you know, in the Jewish tradition, you cannot, it's an unpronounceable name of God. You can't pin God down. So, yeah, that's exciting.
Plus, the Jewish tradition, there is no permanent name. They have always
always changing.
But the bigger thing is, I was back to, I consider nature perfect as it is, because it is evolving. It is growing. It's so much larger than we even grasp, that there is no imperfect. You know, it's not imperfect, it's just, it is a process of always evolving and changing.
Mm-hmm. And what looks to us as evil, an earthquake, a hurricane, whatever. Yes. And so in Martin Luther King's word, the arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we need the spaciousness to see that.
Yeah. Yes. Lovely.
One aspect of Word Alignment I've come to greatly appreciate is the questions and comments from the people attending, but we seem to have gotten in the habit of sitting when we're speaking and speaking to the front of the room, so I miss a lot. So I would appreciate it if people would stand when they had questions or comments,
sure.
So everyone can hear and appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank
right
you. I'll help remember that.
Yeah.
So other thoughts? How is this resonating? Yes, Christine.
Well, you draw a parallel to Jewish culture. Understanding, but I hear Deepak Chopra,
mm-hmm.
and he always says that we're not humans having a spiritual experience, we're spirits having a human experience.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And if you spend time with Fionn Tulloch, you'll hear a lot of Buddhism coming in. It's very fascinating and very exciting. I mean, we live in such an incredible moment in history, when we have all of this wisdom, all these possible threads, not just the three streams of, you know, Celtic spirituality, but all of that to inform us. It's so exciting.
If we see with the heart, we can see it all. If we try to understand and grasp with the head, we can't recognize Christ. We can't see that nature is perfect, is evolving. When we see with the heart, we recognize the perfection of all things as it's continuing to express itself in more and more beautiful ways. If we look for that, that's what we'll see.
Wonderful.
Barry, John, or Don.
Just kind of an observation, but the whole evolutionary process is towards greater complexity.
Yes.
And the simple remains, but there's a growth, a process towards greater complexity, towards fuller development.
Yes.
And it's there. Mm-hmm. That's a scientific view, but it's also the spiritual view, because they work in harmony. And so there is that process. It's ongoing. We've not reached the end. We never will.
Yeah.
But it's an ongoing process.
Well, I think what I'd like to do before we have the break, because you have been sitting, is in the Kaylee Day tradition, there is a tradition of a particular kind of a prayer that's called an Oran Turis. And it's a sung prayer with movement with the body. And the prayer, I have a beautiful chant with Fionn Tulloch's voice. And the prayer is Kaim Agus Korach. And what it is a ritual and a prayer of protection. And so just as I mentioned that this is our soul all the way out here, we're going to do a simple kind of calling in for protection. And we're going to raise our left hand, and then we are going to chant the Kayam Agapura and just very, very gently turn and asking divine protection for our clay body and our soul. Okay? So this is going to take a little bit of movement out. I'll put the music on, and when we complete it, we can move into break. So just try with me. Kayam.
Kayam.
Agus.
Agus.
Korach.
Korach.
And a korach, is the little skin boat.
Okay.
And so here we are with our clay temple in this little skin, as our little skin boat in the world. Okay? So let me get that started. And so with your arm and your other arm at the edge of your skull, you just begin to turn. And as you're ready, begin singing along with Fionn.
Thank you.
me for a moment, let your arms drop to your side. And just feel that presence of that soul encircling your clay temple. And feel the safety and protection that you've brought in. And know that sometime in the future, when you need that sense of safety and protection for your clay body, for your soul, that you can do this simple prayer and bring back to consciousness this blessing.
Okay, let's have a little break.
Thank you.